Blog Talk Radio.
A reaction of sheer genius. Donald Trump apparently thought deep and to some great extent strategically deep feeling after President Assad apparently gassed his own people again. Trump decided to shoot a number of Tomahawk missiles into the facility which launched the sarin gas. How is this an act of sheer political genius? First, it addresses Assad's brutal gassing in a way anyone can agree was right and fair. In your gut, you know it was the right thing to do. Second, as an act against international law and agreements and treaties, it responded to that gassing when no one else would, as everybody knows. Third, it wiped out the source of the gas. Fourth, his quick reaction showed the world not to screw with USA. Fifth, it showed America that he is no lover of Russia. That in itself was brilliant. Sixth, it addressed Obama's original sin, the so-called red line that led to millions of dislocations and deaths after Barack's stupid leading from behind Arab Spring revolutions. Finally, it proves Trump has a heart beating beneath the insults. Well done, Donald. And it's done more than that, too. It has also really restores our place in the world to some extent. And in terms of being able to say that we not only have a big stick, but we're not afraid to use it. And I think it gives people a sense that there is some justice out there, that you can't do anything that you want anywhere in the world. And that, you know, there's going to be a consequence if you really go over the top and you attack people. You do things that are just completely unacceptable to international law and world opinion, that there is something that can be done about it. And, you know, I mean, for so long, we've had this feeling, you know, and I think there's this cult of Obama that is behind a lot of this, that, you know, there was this sense that there's nothing that could be done, that, you know, there is stuff that happens kind of like you can't drill your way out. There's no other option, that Obama presented himself as representing the zenith of world decision-making, international. So anyway, here is Trump's statement on this, but if you're just waking up, if you missed the news yesterday, well, the United States launched some 43 missiles, Tomahawk missiles, into the place that delivered the gas to kill all the innocent folks out there. And here is the president's statement.
Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched. It is in this vital national security interest of the United States to prevent and deter the spread and use of deadly chemical weapons. There can be no dispute that Syria used banned chemical weapons, violated its obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention, and ignored the urging of the UN Security Council. Years of previous attempts at changing Assad's behavior have all failed, and failed very dramatically. As a result, the refugee crisis continues to deepen, and the region continues to destabilize, threatening the United States and its allies. Tonight, I call on all civilized nations to join us in seeking to end the slaughter and bloodshed in Syria, and also to end terrorism of all kinds and all types. We ask for God's wisdom as we face the challenge of our very troubled world. We pray for the lives of the wounded and for the souls of those who have passed. And we hope that as long as America stands for justice, then peace and harmony will, in the end, prevail. Good night, and God bless America and the entire world. Thank you.
Wow, pretty powerful. Just got a text from Frankie, who's criticizing me for being on Barack Obama. I mean, for God's sakes, Barack Obama has been out of office, what, 20 years? Well, wait a second, 2 years? Hold on, 2 months? How long did Barack Obama blame every single thing? You know? How many times did he blame everything on Bush? You know? If Obama was in the White House and he had a glass in his hand and he accidentally dropped it, I'm sure he blamed it on Bush. Here is his original statement's red line warning. This is just for you, Frankie.
I have, at this point, not ordered military engagement in the situation, but the point that you made about chemical and biological weapons is critical. That's an issue that doesn't just concern Syria. It concerns our close allies in the region, including Israel. It concerns us. We cannot have a situation where chemical or biological weapons are falling into the hands of the wrong people. We have been very clear to the Assad regime, but also to other players on the ground, that a red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized. That would change my calculus. That would change my equation.
Somehow under
in a situation this volatile, I wouldn't say that I'm absolutely confident. What I'm saying is we're monitoring that situation very carefully. We have put together a range of contingency plans. We have communicated in no uncertain terms with every player in the region that that's a
risk. Blah, blah, blah. All right, Frankie, there's your hero. There's your butt, buddy. Now, here's a little report from this attack. And it seems like that they didn't kill a bunch of people either. Check this out.
A Syrian official tells the AP that the U.S. missile strike that hit a number of military targets in central Syria has left a number of people dead and wounded. The governor of Homs province did not say how many were killed in the early pre-dawn Friday attack. He did say a fire raged in the airbase in Homs and over an hour following the missile barrage. The governor says the evacuation and transfer of casualties is ongoing. He called the airbase, which is about 45 kilometers or 28 miles east of the city of Homs, a supporting base for Syria's fight against terrorism. Islamic group militants operate in the central Homs province. Activists and rebels say that that base serves as one of the government's most active launching pad for airstrikes on all rebel areas in central and northern Syria. Its government calls all armed groups terrorists. I should tell you that that is the very base from which it is believed, excuse me, it's been a few hours, from which it's believed the Syrian forces launched that sarin gas attack, which ended up killing some 80 people, including 27 children. It is from that base that the terror attack was launched that President Trump now says was the reason for the U.S. retaliation. Jennifer Griffin is live at her position.
All right, so the reports coming back suggest that there was not any Russians in the area when this went off. And I just think this is a brilliant move by the president. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to be going in there in terms of war, but Frankie, you're pathetic, man. You criticize everything the president does and just lay in bed all day with a baby bottle full of whiskey watching MSNBC. That's sick. Well, here's a little MSNBC for you.
Here in studio with us now in New York is the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Adam Schiff of California. Congressman, it's good to have you here tonight.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
We never know exactly what within your remit on the Intelligence Committee is going to be the subject of discussion tonight. Obviously, it's this news that the United States has launched nearly 60 Tomahawk cruise missiles, apparently from ships in the Mediterranean, targeting a Syrian air base on the western side of that country. Let me first just get your reaction, find out how much you know about this.
Well, I received a call from the Director of National Intelligence not long, I think, after the missiles were on their way, and he has cleared me to share this. It was, I think, close to 70 missiles fired from ship at a single target. That target was the airfield where it is believed that the chemical weapons attack originated from. It is, I think, at the present not the intention to have more than this single strike, but of course the administration is reserving their options depending on whether the regime responds against our troops or takes any other action against U.S. Targets or allies. But it was our best intelligence per the director that this is where the attack, the chemical weapons attack, originated from. And that was the response.
When you say this is where the chemical weapons attack originated from, meaning the Syrian aircraft that dropped the munitions that appear to have been chemical weapons munitions in this attack on Tuesday, that's the field they took off.
That's the field, as well as apparently some of the facilities involved in creating the chemical munitions that would go on that aircraft. This, of course, isn't the first chemical weapons attack by the regime. And one of the concerns I have about the action, you know, I certainly think it was on the range of military options, one of the more limited options. It didn't utilize aircraft. There wasn't the risk of loss of life of our pilots. They also evidently did everything they could to vet the site to make sure there wouldn't be human casualties, wouldn't be Russian casualties. But it is obviously a very abrupt change of course.
All right. So another thing that Trump did that was brilliant, he made sure that there were no people there when all this stuff got blown up. So you really can't point fingers at him on that one either, Frankie. Have another suck off the old bottle. Here is a little Friday treat for you. Peter Gabriel Mercy's treat comes out of a poem by Anne Sexton. I wrote an article about this, as I recall. Very, very interesting poem and great song. 620 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text.
Looking down on empty streets, all she can see are the dreams all made sunny, are the dreams made real. All of the buildings, all of the cars were once just a dream in somebody's head.
All right, here's a little bit on the history of the war in Syria from theguardian.uk, and this is from three and a half years ago.
The Syrian conflict in 5 minutes. After enduring decades of authoritarian governments, the people of several Middle Eastern countries raised their voices in protest and ousted their leaders in what has been called the Arab Spring. In Egypt and Tunisia, the uprisings were quick and decisive. In Libya, the protests led to a short civil war that ended with the death of Muammar Gaddafi. Syria is another story. This is Bashar al-Assad, president of Syria. His father, Hafez, ruled for 30 years, during which he modernized the country, but at the cost of a brutal repression. Bashar came into power after his father's death in 2000, and at first he signaled he would be a different kind of leader, but the honeymoon with his people didn't last. At the first sign of dissent, Assad tightened the restrictions to free speech, isolated the economy, and left very clear that democratic rule wasn't in his plans. 12 years of repression had to pass before thousands of people, following the example of Egyptians and Tunisians, took to the streets to demand reforms. At first, Assad's stance was conciliatory, but the repression continued, which in turn multiplied protests around the country. The army answered by opening fire against the demonstrators. Hundreds died, and thousands more were arrested. Any chance of a peaceful resolution died with the demonstrators. Small groups of armed rebels started to appear almost immediately. Since then, government and rebels are mired in a war that claimed the lives of more than 60,000 Syrians in the first 18 months of conflict. After World War I, the French and the British established the borders of the Middle Eastern countries, grouping many religions and ethnic groups in the same territories. One of them, the Muslim sect of the Alawites, has been in command of Syria since the 70s, despite representing only 12% of the population. Under the ideology of keeping the country out of the hands of extremists, the Assad heavily favored their sect and crush those who challenge.
All right, so I'll cut this through in half. What happened is the Arab Spring, people around the Middle East were encouraged to stand up. The administration led people to believe that they had their support and they would. This is typical socialism. This is typical Marxism to support anybody who wants to have a revolution, because socialism can't occur under normal circumstances. Nobody wants it. So there's got to be a revolution. So it didn't matter if the people who were involved in Muslim Spring were radical jihadists, because in these type of countries, these are the only people that actually rise to the top with armed insurgents. All right. I've got a clip here from Western Journalism that I think might have something on this.
Tony Cartellucci's Land Destroyer Report was...
Obama administration orchestrated the Arab Spring. Everybody knows that.
Tony Cartellucci's Land Destroyer Report was the first to reveal the database hacking scandal of defense contractor giant Britain, linking Barack Obama to a proposed false flag chemical weapons attack in Syria. A less shocking find by Tony Cartellucci, but having far wider implications, is that the Obama administration, not some spontaneous grassroots movement, was behind the so-called Arab Spring. According to Cartellucci's recently published book, War on Syria, Gateway to World War III, quote, local dissidents received training, funding, and material assistance from foreign powers through organizations funded largely by the U.S. State Department. One of the organizations involved in recruiting, training, and supporting youth activists ahead of the Arab Spring was Movements.org, or Alliance of Youth Movements, who would later be described admitting to U.S. funding and involvement in the Arab Spring uprising. Many have referred to the so-called Arab Spring as the Islamic Spring, as Muslim Brotherhood Islamists, generally totalitarian, have come to power supposedly via democratic means, as exemplified by Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi. Barack Obama, behind the Arab Spring, was the first to welcome Morsi with open arms. This is the same Mohamed Morsi that has long called for the destruction of the United States. This is the same Mohamed Morsi who has called for the invasion of Jerusalem and destruction of the Jewish people, who has called for a worldwide caliphate that places every country, including the United States, under the thumb of a Muslim caliph.
حلم الخلافة الإسلامية حلم أرض الخلافة يتحقق بإذن الله على يد الدكتور محمد مرسي ليست القاهرة ولا مكة ولا المدينة وإنما القدس إن شاء الله وسيكون هتافنا على القدس.
All right, so basically what happens is that Barack Obama makes the same mistake as Jimmy Carter when the Ayatollah was living in Paris. Jimmy Carter got him, I believe it was $600 million, and then he wired transferred this money, and then they took the money back to Iran and started the Iranian Revolution. And Jimmy Carter claimed that this guy Ayatollah was a freedom fighter like George Washington. Why? I guess Jimmy Carter must be a really big idiot who doesn't do any research. But so that's actually how the dominoes started to fall in the Middle East. There was some actual stability there before that. So Obama does the same thing. He just pretends that anybody who's a rebel should be allowed to have an uprising. We would support them. And then when they took the country over, this is the craziest thing that I've ever heard. And once again, Obama was never held to any standard when this stuff began to happen. I mean, you know, the media is so incompetent and corrupt. So what happens in Egypt, there's an uprising against Morsi, the previous one, previous leader, who was one of our biggest allies in the Middle East. And Obama allowed that to occur with his blessing. And then when Morsi arises, he's part of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Obama is totally supporting this guy. So basically all this stuff happening in the Middle East is a bunch of radical Muslims uprising. So now Libya is considered one of the biggest failed states in the world. It's being run by radical jihadists, and billions of dollars of oil money is getting poured into jihad. But I guess the left, that's no big deal. So this is the same thing that happened in Syria. I mean, Obama's at the root of all this, the throwing of the match on the pool of gasoline. So speaking of which, We'll take a break here. 6:32, we have some local news, 523, 1450, and 805, 6180. This all goes back to Barack and the stupidity of his ideas and the fact that he was hiding who he really was the whole time.
Pictures of broken glass, pictures of steel, she pictures a soul, roaring at the seams, keep the boat out, return to darkness, let's take the boat out, wait until darkness.
Well, in case you're just tuning in, the United States launched between 40 and 50 Tomahawk missiles at Syria at a depot at a basically an Air Force base that where they assembled and used these this gas against their own people. And there is some claim out there, just to let you know, that this is a false flag, that somebody else in the government or somebody else over there, ISIS or somebody else, used the gas. And so I'll get you a clip on that. But here's a little bit from Martha Raddatz on the attack.
Special report. Strike on Syria. Now reporting. George Stephanopoulos.
Good evening. We are coming on the air right now because President Trump has just ordered a military strike on Syria. It comes just 2 days after that horrific chemical attack by the Assad regime that killed almost 100 people, including women and children. President Trump called it an affront to all humanity. Now he has retaliated. I'm here with our chief global affairs anchor, Martha Raddatz. And Martha, all through this campaign, just 3 days ago, the president saying this is not our fight.
And as soon as he saw those pictures, as soon as he saw those images from that chemical attack, he wanted action. I think this is the single fastest punishing strike I have ever seen. Just a couple of days, he made his decision. I also have to say that Secretary Mattis, who was CENTCOM commander in 2013 when President Obama decided not to take action against Syria, this is something he was frustrated by in 2013. He's now the Secretary of Defense. They had plans in place, and they've gone ahead with cruise missiles from Navy ships in the Mediterranean.
I want to go to our military consultant, Steve Gannon in Washington. Steve, you've flown military missions over Iraq. This appears to be Tomahawk cruise missiles against airfields. What does that say to you?
George, it says that the president wanted to not risk any U.S. lives and to punish Assad as quickly as possible. So we think the cruise missiles were launched by two U.S. Navy ships, Arleigh Burke-class destroyers, the USS Ross and the USS Porter, in the eastern Mediterranean. They would have flown likely over Lebanon, low altitude, and come in backdoor and hit targets within Syria in Assad-held terrain.
We've got our chief White House correspondent, John Carl. John, the president down in Mar-a-Lago, you're there as well for that summit with President Xi of China, surrounded by his entire brain trust.
He sure is, and I'm told we will hear from the president shortly, a senior official confirming that these were Tomahawk cruise missiles aimed at Syrian regime-held airfields. George, quite a turnaround for this president. This is a president who had, as a candidate, repeatedly said that he was an America first candidate, that Syria was not the United States problem, that we should focus on the United States. But now, after seeing that chemical weapons attack, he was very blunt yesterday, speaking in the Rose Garden, that that changed his views on Syria, and now he has ordered military action.
I want to go to our chief foreign correspondent, Terry Moran, as well. And Terry, last year you embedded with those Russian troops who are also in Syria, fighting with the United States against ISIS, one of the factors that complicates the U.S. mission here. And we know that the Russians were warning the United States against military action in the Security Council today.
That's right, George. This action by President Trump puts his administration squarely at odds with Vladimir Putin's Russia in Syria. Those Russian troops I embedded with, they changed the war. They saved Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria. And they are fighting not just ISIS, but fighting to protect a longtime Russian strategic interest. They've got a base on the Mediterranean Sea there. They project power throughout the Middle East from their influence in Syria, but they aren't really committed to Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria. They want to do a deal, but this will make it harder.
Okay, Tara Moran and our entire team, thank you.
Well, so pretty big deal, you know. I mean, goes without saying. Now, let's recall here the red line that Obama put out there.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, sir. Have you made up your mind whether to take action against Syria, whether or not you have a congressional resolution approved? Is a strike needed in order to preserve your credibility for when you set these sort of red lines? And were you able to enlist the support of the prime minister here for support in Syria?
Let me unpack the question. First of all, I didn't set a red line. The world set a red line. The world set a red line when governments representing 98% of the world's population said the use of chemical weapons are abhorrent.
That's the same group of people that are support global warming, I guess.
And passed a treaty forbidding their use even when countries are engaged in war. Congress set a red line when it ratified that treaty. Congress set a red line when it indicated that in a...
All right, we got the message here. All right, here is a little interview on Jay Leno.
Now, you took some heat for the whole leading from behind tactic here with Libya. Explain that.
Well, the truth was this was a phrase that the media picked up on, but
okay.
It's not one that I ever used. We led from the front. I mean, we introduced the resolution in the United Nations that...
Obama leads from the front, except when he's leading from behind. Here's from Leon Panetta, his own Secretary of Defense.
Most quoted moments was in August 2012 when President Obama declared that if Syria's President Assad used chemical weapons on his people, it would cross a red line and trigger American military retaliation. You write about this. Assad did use chemical weapons, and the U.S. did not respond by force. You write, the power of the United States rests on its word. Assad's action clearly defied President Obama's warning. By failing to respond, it sent the wrong message to the world. What kind of impact do you think that mixed message, if you will, had on U.S. foreign policy moving forward?
President of the United States is commander-in-chief. The most important thing that the president has is the credibility of our word. That carries an awful lot. And very frankly, President Obama, I think, was very strong about taking a position on our war on terrorism. He was strong about doing what we did to bin Laden. He was willing to take the risk there. He was willing to lay out very clearly that we had to go after al-Qaeda. When he drew the red line in Syria, and I guess some people could argue, should we have drawn a red line there? I think
a lot of people did criticize that statement if he wasn't going to back it up.
Well, I think the question was, is that where you wanted to draw the red line? I happen to think it was the right thing to do. But once you drew that line, and he did, then I think the credibility of the United States is on the line. And so once they used chemical weapons, and we had proof that they used chemical weapons.
And 1,400 people died?
And 1,400 people, men, women, children, died as a result of using chemical weapons, then it was important for us to stand by our word. And go in and do what a commander-in-chief should do. And I think by not doing that or by having – I mean, I think initially they were going to do that, and then they somehow began to pull back. I sent a mixed message, not only to Assad, not only to the Syrians, but to the world. And that is something you do not want to establish in the world an issue with regards to the credibility of the United States to stand by what we say we're going to do.
Nice job, Obama. All right, we'll be right back. 645 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 to call in at 805-6180. If you want to be a pipsqueak and just insult me, like Frankie, go ahead, I can take it. Doesn't matter. Sticks and stones, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be right back.
Nowhere in the corridors of pale green and gray. Nowhere in the suburbs in the cold light. There in the midst of it, so alive and alone, what's the point?
Kelly, what did Frankie say to you? I missed it. How did he insult you?
Oh, he texts me all the time just with a bunch of insulting stuff. I'm trying to get him to call in for once.
Really? I'd love to hear Frankie.
I love Frankie.
I think, you know what I think of Trump? I think he's the biggest shithead that's ever sat in office. But I must say that I'm not too upset that he bombed the hell out of Syria, the government. So I have to give him one for that.
I liked how they said when he saw the kids, he just decided to lay down the law on him. I thought that was good.
Well, you know, Kelly, this has been going on for 6 years.
Right.
It's been going on. I mean, all of a sudden he gets upset about it. Didn't he know what was going on
in Syria?
Last week it was. It's not our business, and now he sees dead babies, and it becomes our business. This man is learning his information from the news media, mostly Fox. I mean, my God, that's disturbing. It's not disturbing that he bombed Syria. It's disturbing that he's not very well informed.
But
anyhow,
you admit that he
was—I can't think of any.
He was well informed on this one, right?
I don't know if how well informed he is. I really don't. This has been going on for, you know, like I said, 6 years.
But what about?
Assad's been torturing and murdering
Kathy.
His people.
Kathy,
and now,
what about how Obama handled Syria?
Yeah, you know, Obama got into office.
Hey, we're on the air.
By saying, I'm going to get it.
Kathy, you want to say something on the air?
No, not really, Kelly.
Come on up. Well, I'm on the air. Hold on. Don't hang up. Don't hang up. All right. We do have a rare appearance of Kathy. It is spring, so maybe that's it. But Kathy, great to hear your voice, and hope you're doing well. And you're telling me that normally you think Trump is an idiot, but he may have gotten it right on this particular missile attack.
Yeah, I can't slam him for that. Really, he hit a military base. He hit an air base. So. Assad deserves it. I can't believe that we as leaders of the free world can stand by and watch this happen. But Obama stayed out of it because it was his job. He ran on getting us out of two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan. He got us out of the wars. He didn't want to jump back into Syria. Look, you guys have slammed him for every one he's done because you take out the leader and there's nothing to fill the void but ISIS. So, you know, he stayed out of Syria. I hate Trump. I think he's the worst thing that's ever happened to democracy and our country. But
worse,
I really
worse
have
than
no,
Hitler.
Worse
than
no
Hitler.
Problem slamming damn Assad because I hate him.
Who's worse, Hitler, Stalin, or Trump?
Hitler and Stalin are horrible. Trump's not in the same class.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's nice to hear.
No, he's not. He's just a threat to our democracy. I really believe he is. I think he's going down the authoritarian line. He's going down a road. I don't want to see this country go down. But you can't even put him in a class with Hitler and Stalin. Come on, Kelly. Be decent.
Well, I'm trying to wake you up. I'm trying to wake you up.
Frankie, call in. Please. I want to hear Frankie talk.
I want to hear Frankie say one-tenth of the stuff he insults me with in a text on the air.
Yeah, you know, you deserve every bit of it. You
yeah,
do.
Frankie.
I mean, you're always slamming liberals.
Yeah,
you
Frankie.
You ought to be able to take it once in a while, Kelly. You don't want all your little slunkies to just call and pat you on the back. You need somebody to tell you that there's another side of the story.
An animal cannot grow without resistance. That is true.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Frankie, call in. Let Kelly have it. He damn well deserves it.
Call in. Kelly. Yeah, thanks. Thank call in, you lazy bum. Get out of bed. Kathy, anything else?
Okay.
Thanks.
Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye. Hey, we had a positive interaction with Kathy. All right, so all right, so I got to let me play a real quick set of ads, and I'm going to come back and do I'm going to have time for the president blinked, why Obama changed course on Syria. Interesting stuff here. Gosh darn you, Obama. stop windsurfing and get down on your knees and repent. Here's Frontline. The president blinked.
The president ordered the military to get ready.
So down at Central Command in Tampa, they were drawing up possible targets. They had lists of what could be hit on the first day, what could be hit on the second day.
The consensus was that the Pentagon would launch strikes on Saturday, August 31st.
Our finger was on the trigger. We had gone through the targeting plans and the targeting solutions. The crews were alerted, and so we had everything in place, and we were just waiting for instructions to proceed.
And the threat of U.S. action was enough to, you know, have a significant effect on the ground. It was noted all over the Arab world that suddenly people in the regime were panicking.
But Obama's having second thoughts. He's feeling alone. His friends in Britain say, yes, we're with you, but then Parliament says, no, we're not.
It is clear to me that the British Parliament, reflecting the views of the British people, does not want to see British military action. I get that, and the government will act accordingly.
It was a Friday night, and I got a call from the President of the United States, and he said to me, I am considering an alternative course of action, and he wanted me overnight to consider whether a delay would in any way affect our ability to be effective with our military options.
The next morning, Obama summoned his longtime foreign policy advisor, now Chief of Staff, Dennis McDonough.
And he goes for a walk on the South Lawn with McDonough, and they circle this pathway again and again and again for 45 minutes talking about what to do. And the president tells him, I've got this idea. Why don't we go to Congress and ask them to approve a strike? What he's looking for is buy-in.
As near as we can tell, he worried that he didn't have sufficient political support for, you know, what might be a long-running conflict.
The president was looking for a way to not have to make good on the threat that he had made. I think because the president, having drawn that red line, realized that he had no appetite for direct military engagement in Syria.
So he comes back in from this walk with Dennis McDonough, and he tells some of his other advisors, and they can't believe what they're hearing. This is a crazy idea as far as they're concerned. If you go to Congress, they tell him, and you lose a vote like this, it would be devastating to your political standing. And they push back, and he held firm.
A few hours later, the president called a press conference in the Rose Garden.
After careful deliberation, I have decided that the United States should take military action against Syrian regime targets. But having made my decision as commander-in-chief, based on what I am convinced is our national security interests, I will seek authorization for the use of force from the American people's representatives in Congress.
At the time, you know, he was describing it as seeking strong political support for this decisive move. He had all the rhetoric of action, but in truth, it was stepping back from the imminent attack that was ahead. You know, it was all in motion. And at the last minute, the president blinked.
I was there in southern Turkey at that time, and I can tell you that the Syrian people were looking at the skies, hoping that the United States Air Force would come to the rescue. And then all of a sudden, on September 1st, the Syrian people woke up and realized that the United States was not going to come to the rescue.
Not only did the Syrians believe this, the French armed forces were mobilizing. They were ready to go ahead, and they stopped at the last minute when they heard that the president is going to ask for congressional authorization.
I mean, this is in some ways the riskiest decision, certainly in foreign policy, that he's made of his presidency.
Nice job, Barack. The entire country has been destroyed. Millions of people are killed or dislocated. But he sleeps well at night. Why? Because he realizes he's one of the greatest leaders that has ever been put on this planet, and he has to content himself with that. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, a salute to our former president, Barack Obama, for drawing a line in the sand and then backing away from it. 6:59, and we'll be back after a break for the next hour, and I got even better stuff for you. Call in, Frankie, you lazy bum, you lazy socialist.
In your daddy's arms again, in your bursting streets, swelling on that side, dreaming of mercy. In your daddy's arms.
The latest figure that I've seen is 59 missiles getting sent into Syria. And so a pretty major assault against that country's ability to produce and deliver these type of things. Now, the base there is supposed to be pretty much destroyed. Here is a little bit on how the Trump airstrike in Syria unfolded from the Daily Telegraph. Hold on a second. Let me start this over. I'm not sure if it's got audio, but here we go.
Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched.
That's what these things sound like when they launch off a ship, to state the obvious.
On Tuesday, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children.
Well, no new information there. Here is, let's see here. Got another little story here. Here is the intel that led to U.S. strike on Syrian airbase from Fox.
Talk to us about how the United States Navy prepared and practiced for this.
Well, Shepard, we've just learned from a Pentagon spokesman, Captain Jeff Davis, described to us how, in fact, the sailors on board the USS Porter and USS Ross prepared for 2 days prior to the launch of those Tomahawk missiles. They did things such as prepare by inserting the coordinates of that airbase, Shariat airbase in Syria, into the Tomahawk. Those Tomahawk missiles, those TLAM missiles, have to be programmed, pre-programmed before they are launched. So they went through the drills so that they would be ready when given the orders to launch the strikes on board those two destroyers who were in the Eastern Mediterranean tonight. We've reported that they were each carrying up to 70 Tomahawk missiles altogether. They ended up firing 59 Tomahawk missiles at a very small area inside Syria at that Shariat air base just outside Homs. It's about 120 miles from where the sarin nerve gas attack occurred 72 hours ago. The reason that that air base was chosen as the target, we're told, and John Roberts has been reporting from down at Mar-a-Lago, the reason it was chosen is that there is intelligence suggesting that is where the Syrian plane was loaded with the chemical agents, the sarin gas, inside the bomb that was dropped on Tuesday on those innocent women and children as they slept. And So this airbase was chosen for the very reason that in the past, chemical weapons have been stored there. Prior to 2013, there were large weapons stores there. We've also learned from the Pentagon that they took great lengths not to actually hit the remaining chemical agents that are stored at the base. And we also have tonight, we've learned from the Pentagon, Shepard, that they have released in real time, they could see the flight path of that that Syrian plane as it made its way to the village Khan Sheikhoun, where the sarin gas was dropped on Tuesday. And they have released the flight path of that Syrian plane. And as Brett Baer and John Roberts have reported tonight, we now know that Western intelligence and U.S. intelligence knew that the Russians knew in real time that the Syrians were actually loading those chemical weapons onto that plane. So that, I think, was a real turning point for both the Pentagon as well as the president and his national security staff when they received that intelligence that the Russians, in fact, were aware that the Assad regime was going to drop these chemical weapons. So this particular base was chosen for a very specific reason. And think about it, Shep. These are 59 1,000-pound bombs, if you will. They're missiles, Tomahawk missiles, that landed in this small space within this airfield and striking these hangars and airplanes at this airbase. Each one of those Tomahawks cost about $1 million. So that's $59 million in munitions that were expended tonight to drop the weaponry on this airbase and to send this signal to the Assad regime that using chemical weapons would not be tolerated. And those Tomahawks, they fly at about 500 miles per hour. They are 18 feet long. Each Tomahawk is 18 feet long, 2 feet wide. It's really like a flying telephone pole. It's been described that way to me. And they can be seen with the naked eye as they're moving along. And it could have taken upwards of 30 to 40 minutes for them to fly from the USS Porter and the USS Ross, which have been based in the Mediterranean.
Wow.
Shepard.
Jennifer, you mentioned they've been preparing for this for a couple of days.
All right. So here is a little bit on the idea that it's a false flag. A false flag is something that supposedly, this is big in conspiracy circles, a false flag is where there is a claim that the government is doing something that is really not what it appears to be. They either falsify information, like, you know, some people say that 9/11, the attack on 9/11 was a false flag. It was totally made up, or it was a government run organ. You know, this is very common, very, very common. Now here is, let me just get this set up for you here, but here is I've got Ron Paul right here talking about it being a false flag. So let me hold on a second. I've got another one from RT saying the same thing.
Chemical attack in Syria. We're joined tonight by former diplomat Jim Jattras. Jim, nice to have you with us tonight.
Thank you.
Well, I was at the White House today for the briefing, and I left wondering what the president's actual position is on Syria. What do you make of what you heard today?
Honestly, I have nothing good. I mean, from his remarks today, it sounds like he's drunk the Kool-Aid, that basically we're back where we were under the Obama administration. You and I don't know what happened on the ground there in Syria, but Is it allowed for us to ask the question? Here is Assad winning the war, going into peace talks with a very strong position, seeing the beginning of American and Russian cooperation, not only against ISIS, but also against al-Qaeda, which is the group that is holding Idlib. And suddenly Assad and Putin would upturn all of that, use chemical weapons, which they deny having had, thereby revealing that they have them, just for the sheer evil joy of killing people? Doesn't something seem wrong here? And we're supposed to believe that just because the mainstream media is telling us that. But if we doubt that, especially here on RT, it's because it's a propaganda bullhorn and we're all Putin trolls.
So it's very possible that ISIS could have done this to divide all parties that are uniting against them.
Not ISIS, because remember, it's not ISIS in Idlib. It's Al-Qaeda and its allies, the people the United States has been supporting in the past through CIA covert programs and through all of our Saudi and Turkish and other allies. Those are the groups that are holding Idlib, and we know they have chemical weapons.
What I find interesting about Capitol Hill is that the lawmakers don't seem to know his policy, nor are they asking the questions about it.
No, because first off, you have almost total unanimity on Capitol Hill that Assad's the bad guy, Assad must go, the old policy, and Trump was the outlier. Now we have Trump seemingly getting on the reservation, and you hear this kind of contented clucking coming from Capitol Hill that he's finally coming around to reality, in essence, and that's very worrisome.
What did you make of the exchange at the UN between Nikki Haley and the...
Well, here is Ron Paul's take on this. Check it out, false flag.
Yesterday, there was some bombing with possibly gas exposure in Syria, and things have changed. It reminds me sort of weather reports. Well, if you don't like the weather, just wait an hour. You know, you'll get different weather. Well, that's sort of what happens in the Middle East sometimes. That just wait, it'll change. And actually, you know, before this episode of possible gas exposure and who did what, things were going along reasonably well for the conditions. You know, Trump says let the Syrians decide who should run their country, and peace talks were breaking out, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS were on the run, on maybe defeated. So it was like, you know, in spite of their problems with this foreign policy, it looked like there was some benefit, but it looks like maybe somebody didn't like that, so there had to be an episode. And the blame now is that we can't let that happen because it looks like it might benefit Assad. So Assad, they claim, now went and released gas to kill a bunch of people. But, Daniel, we might not have much of a job here today because I looked at the New York Times to find out, to get the explanation, and they said, worst chemical attack in years in Syria. U.S. blames Assad. So it's all over and done with, but not quite so easy, is it? What happened 4 years ago in 2013, you know, this whole thing about crossing the red line. And ever since then, the neocons have been yelling and screaming. Even part of the administration is still yelling and screaming about Assad using poison gases on his people 4 years ago. Not quite true.
Yeah, it was never proven, in fact. And, the UN official Carla Del Ponte said that attack was most likely done by the rebels based on the evidence. But here you have Nikki Haley, U.S. ambassador to the UN, almost as we speak, literally, at the UN Security Council, saying, quote, we know Assad has used chemical weapons before. It's not true. It has never been proven that he has. He may have. We do know that the rebels have used them. That has been proven.
And who would benefit? It makes no sense, even if you were totally separate from this and take no sides of this, and you were just an analyst, it doesn't make any sense for Assad in these conditions to all of a sudden use poison gases. I think it's zero chance that he would have done this, deliberately, and he's doing this now. But we could also go to a famous senator who's an expert on foreign policy, and we could go ask John McCain to explain it, and he found somebody to blame. And I don't know what he has it in for the president. We criticize our president once in a while, and we try to be, you know, balanced and criticize the things we think he's doing that we don't like. But McCain says, blame Trump. It's all Trump's fault because he hasn't been aggressive enough.
All right, so we'll take a break here. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450-523-1450-805-6180, and we'll be right back. All right, so how much of Syria is already destroyed, and do you guys believe that it has a lot to do with Obama, if he had launched that strike against Syria, how many people could have been saved? And Aleppo, population 2 million, 2.13 million, second largest city in Syria, has been completely reduced. Here's a little clip on that from France 24 English.
At first, an estimated 250,000 people have lost their lives in the ongoing Syrian conflict.
This is about a year ago.
And 11 million others have so far been displaced. Thousands of Syrians living in Aleppo have witnessed the horror of a war waging on for almost 5 years now. Now, Western media have been allowed back inside the walls of the ancient city to see the damage firsthand.
It's the city that stood the test of time, and Aleppo is opening its doors to Western media once again. This ancient fortress has been defended by Syrian soldiers since war broke out between the Free Syrian Army and the Syrian armed forces. A panoramic view of the city shines a light on the damage incurred since 2012. Entire neighborhoods lie destroyed, leaving an apocalyptic scene where plumes of smoke still never seem to disappear.
Look what's left of the Carlton Hotel. It was the most beautiful in the city, but it was hit twice, and now nothing remains of it.
Before the war, thousands of visitors would rush to visit this historic site.
We had to pile up bags of sand in order to preserve these treasures.
But it wasn't enough. There are signs.
All right, so anyway, just to look at, you know, Google Aleppo, and it just is like one flattened or hollowed out building after another, many of them apartment complexes, city of 2 million. Is this on Obama? Is it his fault? Is it his fault for drawing a red line in the sand? You know? Is it, I mean, obviously it's on Syria and Assad as well, but if Obama had gone in there, would it have changed the course of history there? And I guess we'll never know, but we'll take a break here nonetheless. I've got a little bit of a documentary on Tomahawk missiles if you're interested. I don't know if you're interested in that, but I also have something on the history of this song. This is a interesting song. Peter Gabriel, Mercy Street, was... let me tell you a little bit about Anne Sexton, is the American poet who had been a fashion model and had become got involved in poetry and had written some books on poetry. And one of her poems was called Mercy Street. And Peter Gabriel was in the United States and had just picked up one of her books and started to read it and was really influenced by that. So, and Anne Sexton was really brilliant, but very troubled. And, I think went crazy, but 7:25 a.m. Las Cruces, got some local news for you. 523-1450 a.m. Las Cruces, 805-6180 to text. Here's a little a walk down memory lane. How good of a president was Obama, or at the time, how he analyzed himself? Maybe fourth best ever. Check it out.
The issue here is not going to be a list of accomplishments. As you said yourself, Steve, I would put our legislative and foreign policy accomplishments in our first 2 years against any president, with the possible exceptions of Johnson, FDR, and Lincoln. But, just in terms of what we've gotten done in modern history,
Obama's intellect is deep and vast as the entire cosmos, as the entire universe, of course. Goes without saying. He doesn't make mistakes. Now, here's how Bashar al-Assad destroyed Syria.
As Syria struggles through an ongoing civil war and the terrorist group ISIS spreads through the region, there seems to be one person being blamed for the significant decline of the Middle Eastern country, Bashar al-Assad. So is Assad destroying Syria? Well, Syria was already suffering from a dynastic authoritarian regime since Assad's father seized power in the 1970s in a coup d'etat. When Bashar took over as the nepotistic ruler of Syria in 2000, he continued his father's repressive regime. He instigated severe crackdowns on any political dissent, private or public. The resulting backlash forced him to release a number of political prisoners to ease tensions. But it didn't work. By 2011, when much of the Arab world was revolting during the Arab Spring, Assad authorized the release of a significant number of terrorist leaders from prison. These terrorists would soon after regroup to form ISIS. This, coupled with violent crackdowns on protesters, turned the Arab Spring into an armed rebellion by the Syrian opposition, pitting the Sunni Muslim majority against Assad's Alawite Shia minority. As the civil war progressed, Assad continued arresting citizens and was personally implicated in a number of war crimes by the UN, including the imprisonment and killing of his own citizens. By 2015, some 200,000 political prisoners alone had been jailed for speaking out against the regime. Although most of the Arab League, along with the U.S. and EU, have demanded that Assad step down as president, he instead ran for a third term in 2014. His victory was widely considered illegitimate and the votes faked or coerced. Recent reports suggest that Assad has been assisting ISIS militarily in their spread across Syria. In the meantime, Assad's actions have forced 6.5 million residents out of their homes and 3 million out of the country, as well as decimating the economy and military. Reports say that Syria would not return to pre-civil war conditions for another 30 years at least, following the end of the conflict. In short, Bashar al-Assad is not only destroying Syria, but essentially helped facilitate the formation and rise of ISIS. To learn about where they're going, check out our video.
9.5 million Syrians have been forced to flee their homes. Over 3 million of those have fled the country.
There's a link to that video in the description below. Thanks so much for watching TestDoNews.
All right. So anyway, this is what we're dealing with. Could it have been avoided? Nobody knows, right? But on the alternative, if Obama doesn't get up and say that we're putting a red line for the use of gas, what happens? On the alternative to that, what if he followed through on that attack that was already, that the ships were already in place to launch the assault, and Obama steps back and then says he never put a red line in the sand, that it was the world. So the takeaway from that is that he really did, whether he ever said it or not, his only theory of leadership really was leading from behind. And maybe that's the kind of passive aggressive way that someone trained to be a community organizer, maybe that's all he would know. Some headlines: dozens of missiles into Syria, airbase almost completely destroyed, Rand Paul, Trump must come to Congress for war approval, Wall Street Journal, president shows he's willing to act forcefully quickly. National security team all agreed on strike. New York Times, speed intended to maximize element of surprise. Russia rages, bolsters Syria support. Kremlin aggression against sovereign state. The Daily Sun, the way World War III could erupt. Savage, no war. Trump whiplash. Biggest fans are turning on him. And Abrams, he's now the leader of the free world. And Obama is thinking of replacing his chief of staff, and the House leader, Kevin McCarthy, may be on there. Tornadoes hitting Washington, D.C. High winds bring down cherry trees at Jefferson Memorial. Stores closing at record pace as Amazon chews up retailers and is twice the size of Walmart now, or worth twice as much. Manufacturing jobs hit 8-year high, government outpacing government growth. Unemployment 4.5%. 153 million Americans employed in March, setting second straight record. And, you know, I got this story. I'll come back and tell you about this guy that had been fired out of he was the U.S. Attorney for New York. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He just kind of exposed his cards. Bitter Hillary blames everything on everybody else, blaming it on Russia, etc. And, all right, we'll take a little segue here. Kelly O'Connell, 736 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. I will get to your text. I know I keep forgetting, but I will. And here's your weather.
The tenderness and tremble in the hips of kissing Mary's lips, dreaming of her sweet where you're inside out, dreaming of mercy in your daddy's arms again.
All right, so let me get to some of these texts. These, I don't want to hold these texts hostage here. I'll read them from, try to read them here. Okay. All right, I'll just go on a couple of these. It's about time a president showed what leadership is. Good for Trump. Gassing one's own people is pure evil. History changes for the better when strong men act, for the worse when weak men do nothing. A little bit of a quote there from trying to remember the guy's name. Evil flourishes when people don't act to fight against it. When evil flourishes when good men do nothing, basically. All right, here's another one. Why are you in love with lactose intolerant screechy voice con kook muck lunabin? That's why I honestly think, Kathy, you need to go do a welfare check on your fellow liberal. He is just absolutely going off the rails, going nuts. Get off the Siri. When are you going to own up to being a supporter of perverts? Mean you love O'Reilly and the blank grabber in chief? You cons are the new version of Keystone Cops. I honestly think that Frankie is cracked up over Trump. I'm tired of Secret Service agents shacking up with hookers. They need a new directive. I expect disease to spread in Venezuela. Trump would have already accomplished much more if the demonocrats and their fake news media would get the hell out of the way. They've been over four words for Obama. It's kind of sad. Who knows what Obama could have actually achieved if he had somebody holding him holding him accountable. Yes, we should stand up for Trump. Be ready for possible violence. And this is going back. Wonder if Susan Rice will go on all of Sunday's shows and lie her rear end off again. Yeah, it's possible. All right. Here's a story for you. There's a guy that gets fired, and his name is Preet. And he's the U.S. attorney in New York. Former U.S. attorney was fired by Trump, mocks the president in speech. So this guy shows all of his cards here in this uh, in his little tirade that he's I can't get that one to play. So here is another thing, but I got a couple of clips here to tell you everything that you need to know about this clown. And I think it is sad to this continual thing where you've got these people that are not, you know, they're working for liberalism. Liberalism is kind of like Islam in that it is a claim of world, you know, a claim to world authority, and you should only ever work for liberalism, even if you pretend to be working for something else. Anyway, here's from Watch It Politics, Preet Bharara, who was highly saluted U.S. attorney in New York. He's then removed from office and pretends like he can't believe it, and then it comes out later that he's a raging lefty.
Classic former.
And hold on a second here. Here is, I just have to make sure something else isn't playing. But here is from Watch It News.
It was just a classic.
Former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara didn't hold back when it came to his former boss, President Trump. In his first major public speech since he was fired as the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, Bharara criticized Trump's rhetoric while also poking fun at the former reality show star. Deliberately exaggerating the size of his audience, he said, "I don't care what the pictures show. My crowd is a lot bigger than Obama's crowd. It looks to be 1 to 1.5 million. It's a really huge crowd. Look, that's the information I was given." But joking aside, in an interview with the New York Times, Bharara called his firing a direct example of the kind of uncertain, helter-skelter incompetence of the Trump team. According to BuzzFeed News, he added that he was still unclear on why he was pushed out.
You've got to be kidding, right? You say that kind of stuff and then pretend that, like, other people don't know you're a radical wacko? Got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, this is Deborah. A wonderful Friday, everybody.
Thank you, Deborah. What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. I had a dog sighting on Donna Anna Road at the Pickwick.
Okay.
Yes. And but he was pretty good. They said he was a service dog, but he was all right.
Did you give him crack his skull with your cane to teach him not to go into the stores?
No, I don't use a cane. I use a chair when I'm out and about.
Well,
this
nice.
Is before my herbal teas and my over-the-counter supplements this morning I'm talking. What I'd like to put out there, would people like to get start a group in the Las Cruces area for the bus problems with people with disabilities?
Bus problems? You mean people are still riding the bus? Never heard
riding?
I never heard of that before.
Well, riding the bus.
Ghost fleet. All right, Deborah, get your information out. We got to go.
Thank you.
All right. I don't know who you would call, but we have another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
Good morning, Kelly. How are you?
Good. Is this, who's this?
Takashi speaking.
You sound, don't put us on speaker, man. Come on, have a little respect.
How you doing, buddy? How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Another wonderful day above ground, my friend. I've been listening to Limbaugh lately. He seems to have changed his posture, too, just like everybody else has been lately.
Meaning what?
Well, his hardline conservative stance he normally, projects have seemed to shift it a little bit to the left.
Any specifics on that?
I mean, just in general, it seems like everybody's kind of drifting away from that old establishment, you know, Republican mentality, you know. I don't know what exactly is happening as far as evolution.
Well, forget about evolution. Do you have any actual facts to back this up? Any particular statements that he said that are leftist?
Well, I wouldn't say particularly because I didn't make notes or anything. Usually I'm driving while listening. But I just noticed a change in tone and in posture.
Well, I'll keep it. I'll keep an ear out for that. Was there anything else? I got one more thing I want to play.
No, I just wanted to chime in.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Feel free to call in, but do have an organized point when you call in. But anyway, all right. So I will. We won't get to the cruise missile documentary. But here's more from Preet Bharara.
Bharara made his first public appearance since the Trump administration forced him from his post as U.S. attorney.
I have no complaints. I have no remorse. There is a swamp. A lot of the system is rigged. But I would respectfully submit, you don't drain a swamp with a slogan. You don't drain it by replacing one set of partisans with another.
Speaking of partisans, this is like the most partisan guy I've ever heard, but he's supposed to keep his job, right? People are so hypocritical. All right, here's from Dinesh D'Souza explaining who Preet Bharara really is, the former New York attorney for the U.S. This is very eye-opening.
Remember when filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza was convicted of election fraud? Well, it was ousted U.S. attorney Preet Bharara who spearheaded Mr. D'Souza's prosecution.
So it wasn't a surprise when D'Souza tweeted simply, good riddance to the outgoing prosecutor.
All right, here to tell his side of the story and new details on the case is filmmaker and convicted felon Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, it must be a great day for you. I can imagine the feeling if someone put me in jail for 8 months and all of a sudden they're now ousted. However, you now can tell us something that you were never able to say before about your case.
Well, a congressional oversight committee has been trying to get a copy of my case file now for well over a year, and Bharara's office as well as the Obama administration had been blocking it, basically saying this is an ongoing case, but of course my case ended in 2014. So finally, Congress now has the case file. And it's very interesting because it kind of is a revealing window into Bharara's way of doing business. The first thing that's highlighted inside my case file is I'm a conservative. I'm a prominent critic of the Obama administration. Now, this should be completely irrelevant in the decision about whether to prosecute me. It should be beside the point. But of course, in Bharara's case, it was the point.
And just to let you know that Dinesh D'Souza is the one who put out all of those anti-Obama and anti-Hillary movies. And he got prosecuted and he got convicted of a felony.
So there's evidence in this case file, and there's a lot more, that this was a political prosecution conducted by Bharara as a henchman for the Obama administration.
Who is Preet Bharara?
He's a ruthless and a very deceitful guy. The proof of this is that when he was trying to convince a judge to lock me up, to put me in federal prison. Now, remember, no American has ever been prosecuted, let alone locked up for doing what I did. So how could Bharara succeed in convincing a judge? Well, he took a series of cases, all involving corruption, and altered the facts of those cases to conceal the corruption, to try to con the judge into sending me to federal prison. It didn't really work, but it's a kind of...
But he was convicted nonetheless, and that's the guy who doesn't know why he was fired, and that's the problem in D.C. now in American politics, is you've got all of these people that are free agents. They're no different than jihadists, really, in my opinion, in terms of being political jihadists. They're operating for their God, which is globalism or socialism or Marxism, whatever. They're free-range chickens. They're out of their minds, and they're going around attacking people. And Trump is the poop du jour, so they're going to go and tear him to shreds. We'll take a break here, and then I'll give you a little bit on this poem, Mercy Street, which is or this song. It's absolutely extraordinary if you ever get a chance to listen to it. But somebody had asked yesterday, like the little bit of Peter Gabriel that I put on yesterday in terms of songs. So we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
Street,
inspired this song by Peter Gabriel and Sexton, November 9th, 1928 to October 4th, 1974. She was an American poet known for her highly personal and confessional writing. She won a Pulitzer Prize for poetry in 67 for her book Live or Die. The themes of her poetry include her long battle against depression and mania, suicidal tendencies, and intimate deals from her private life, her children, her husband. But other things that are not mentioned in here are she has a kind of an interest in religion, although she is not by any stretch of the imagination an evangelical. Now, here is 45 Mercy Street, poem by Anne Sexton, and she had already written a play with that name. In my dream, drilling into the marrow of my entire bone, my real dream, I'm walking up and down Beacon Hill, searching for a street sign, namely Mercy Street, not there. Now, here's a lady. I tried to find a clip of Anne Sexton reading this poem, but here's somebody else reading a little bit of the introduction of it. It's kind of a long poem.
My dream, drilling into the marrow of my entire bone, my real dream, I'm walking up and down Beacon Hill, searching for a street sign, namely Mercy Street. Not there. I try the Back Bay. Not there. Not there. And yet I know the number. 45 Mercy Street. I know the stained glass window of the foyer. Three flights of the house. Its parquet floors. And I know the furniture. The mother. Grandmother. Great-grandmother, the servants. I know the cupboard, the boat of ice, solid silver where the butter sits in neat squares, like strange giant's teeth on the big mahogany table. I know it well. Not there. Where did you go? 45 Mercy Street. With great-grandmother kneeling in her whalebone corset and praying gently but fiercely to the wash basin at 5 a.m.
All right, so that's a little bit from the poem. That's probably a third or a quarter of the poem. Now, Peter Gabriel had found this book when he was in Boston and read it, and then... And he liked the confessional style of it. Then the song comes together. He was on a plane. He told Mojo Magazine in 2013, Pan Am had started doing mileage programs. I got 100,000 miles from touring, so I booked a free flight from L.A. to Rio de Janeiro. The catch was I had to travel economy. On the way onto the plane, I said hello to the bass player from Earth, Wind & Fire. After we took off, the plane developed a fault of some kind, something with the landing gear. The pilot told us he had to fly over the Pacific and dump some fuel. That's when everybody became very scared, writing farewell letters. I even scribbled some notes. Earth, Wind, and Fire's bass player came back from first class to see me in economy and just said in a sonorous voice, "Pray, brother." The pilot got us down, thank God. In Rio, I met the drummer, Jalma Correa. I worked on some ideas with him, and that all led to the track Mercy Street. Here it is. Have a great weekend, Kelly O'Connell. Meet you back in 2 days. Ciao.